University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you conversations with outstanding personalities on issues of interest to local, national, and international communities. Our guest is the Honorable Oliver St. Clair Franklin, OBE. He is the CEO and President of International House in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Honorary British Consul in Philadelphia, and among his other activities, a member of the boards of trustees of very high-profile organizations and foundations. He is a product of Lincoln University and the Balliol College at Oxford. Welcome to University Forum, Mr.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, OBE, tell us you are a recipient of the Order of the British Empire. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's, you know, I often laugh about it because it's an honor that has a lot of prestige in the United Kingdom and in the Commonwealth and very little here in the United States. It's given by the Queen of England for particular services to Britain. I got mine for services to British industry when I was in the investment business. Very few Americans get them. And it really was quite an honor to be an OBE. It sort of gave me a new view of sort of how Britain operates, because honors in that part of the world are sort of very important. In America, we care about the cash prize, but in Britain, there's no money attached to it, but it is an honor that you take with you for the rest of your life.
Is there a special kind of ceremony involved?
Oh, there's a huge ceremony. I did not have mine given to me by the Queen. I had mine given to me by the British ambassador in Washington. As an American, it's very difficult to bow because we don't have a sovereign. We're actually a republic. And so the ambassador had a wonderful ceremony, and you get a medal, which you can never wear in America, but you can certainly wear in Britain because they have events where it says decorations may be worn. So you get a medal, and I suppose the only other thing you possibly will get is an obituary in the London Times. So it's not so bad altogether.
Well, I think it's something you ought to wear now and then. We ought to want to see that. I think it's marvelous.
Thank you very much.
Very nice indeed. I wasn't sure what it meant as far as the Honorary British Consul in Philadelphia is concerned. Is there a linkage between those two things?
No, there isn't. I became the Honorary Consul in 98, and the Honorary British Consul means that you are a citizen of the host country, in this case the United States, but you do handle British affairs. You are the diplomatic representative. We have 32 consuls here in Philadelphia representing many, many countries. And of those 32, about 28 are honorary consuls, people who don't have full-time jobs. But, you know, when I have difficult issues, I refer to New York. I spend most of my time in that position working with British companies that want to move into the region, advising American companies or Pennsylvania companies that would like to go to the U.K. To do business. And so it's really a hodgepodge. I answer a lot of phone calls from Brits who have lost their passports, things like that. But all in all, it's a fun position because it really keeps you really in the center of Philadelphia-British relations, which is what I enjoy.
You spent some time in England.
I did. I went to Lincoln University, which I consider the greatest university in America. I graduated in 1966, and then I had the privilege of spending 3 years at Oxford. And interestingly, like Lincoln, where we had a lot of, it was all male at that time, and we had a lot of people. It was a civil rights movement. And a lot of my Lincoln classmates went on to distinguish themselves. I have one that's the first black Supreme Court justice of Massachusetts. And when these guys graduated in 1966, I looked at my class and I said, I can't imagine any of us ever doing anything significant, how wrong I was. But when I got to Oxford, I think I was fooled to a large extent because I said to those folks that I met there, I don't know how they can distinguish themselves. And they went on and distinguished themselves as well. So Oxford was a wonderful experience, and I really encourage anyone who's in college to think seriously about spending a year abroad. It doesn't matter what country it is. I think today people should go to India and China. I don't think they should go to Britain. I think they should go to South America. They should go to places where the future is. The future is no longer in Europe. The future is in Asia. The future is in Africa. The future is in South America. And I really encourage people to have a chance when they're young to spend more than a year in a foreign country. And you'll just grow. You'll just grow so much.
It can change your life.
Absolutely.
I know my son spent some time at Rome.
Oh, absolutely.
Temple has a number of programs
there.
Oh,
yes, they do.
And it made him a different person. He's never been the same since then. Back and forth to Europe. Mm-hmm. Every place he can go is to travel.
And part of what my message has been for a long time is that, Americans we're insular because we have a huge country. We can just take a vacation every year for a century and go to a different part of this country and be very amused and find something new. But at the same time, we need to go places where we need passports.
Absolutely.
Because people have different worldviews. People have different ideas. And their ideas are just as legitimate as our own. And we have to learn how to listen and how to be critical and how to dialogue with people with different perspectives.
Now, your first trip to Britain, I guess it was your first at the time. Was that on related to your Woodrow Wilson
Yes,
fellowship?
It was. Yes, it was. But really, my first trip abroad was when I was at Lincoln. There was a program called Operations Crossroads Africa.
Yes.
Which was founded by Reverend Robinson, who was a Lincoln man.
James Robinson.
And he came out to Lincoln when I was a sophomore. And in those days, everyone had to go to chapel once a week. Wednesday, you went to chapel before lunch. And there were always these very eloquent speakers there, and you had to go. They took roll. And, he talked about this program, and I got so psyched and applied for it. And actually, between my sophomore and junior year, I spent a summer in Malawi, which is in Central Africa, working on building a school with young people. So that really was my first foray sort of out of the country.
Jim Robinson, I remember him well.
He was an amazing man.
Yes, he was indeed. So. Opened up the world before others even thought about it.
Well, Kennedy found out, apparently President Kennedy found out about the program and invited him when he was running for president, and Reverend Robinson spent dinner with President Kennedy, and that's really how the Peace Corps was born, based on his idea, an African-American.
Marvelous indeed. You are the president and the CEO of International House.
Right.
Yes.
It's really exciting because I was in the investment business for a while and for a long time, and had decided that that it was time at my age to, when most of the people in my business were retiring and going to play golf or do something else, I really wanted to do something that didn't require me to be on a plane every day. And I really wanted to do something that was mission driven. And I wanted to do something that was international. And I wanted to stay in Philadelphia. I've lived in Philadelphia, but worked pretty much everywhere else. And when the opportunity came to lead the International House, I really jumped at it. And every day, it is the largest international community in the state of Pennsylvania. 1,500 scholars and students from all over the area, from Temple, Drexel, Penn, Community College, you name it, come and live there. And the reason they live there is because it's really an institute for global leadership. We work with them. We teach them how to be global leaders. So that was a real blessing for me to have this opportunity to lead this really great institution.
You've been there now for how long?
I've been there 3 years. We are going to be celebrating our centennial in 2010. Remember, this is a typical Philadelphia story. It's the first International House in the world. And from it, there are now 17 on four continents. And if you ask the average Philadelphian at this point about International House, sure, they come there for films. They come for a lot of cultural events. We have a great jazz series, which WRTI is very helpful with us. But if you ask the average person, tell me about International House, they'd have no idea that it's a typical Philadelphia story. It's first, at the first. And what our goal is when we have the centennial in 2010, to bring all the heads of these international houses and as many of their alumni as possible to Philadelphia – to celebrate something that is wonderful, the International House Movement, getting young people in colleges and universities and creating a community for them to live together and talk about the big issues of the day. So it's pretty exciting.
Well, look, you're looking forward to a great event.
Oh, absolutely.
In 2010.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I read an article written by you that deals with Philadelphia and the very thing that we're talking about, which is the global relationship.
Yeah.
And a question is to us keeping it kind of a secret. A lot of people don't know about this. Talk a little bit about
Well, that article was written, as you know, and I'm sure everyone in your audience realized that we really spent a lot of energy to try to make Philadelphia competitive for the Olympics. And we really spent a lot of time putting plans together. A lot of people got energized. And when we went before the Olympics committee, we were immediately disqualified because they considered Philadelphia as not having an international reputation. And we were all floored by that when you consider how many great international institutions we have in the city. And I felt that we should take that, the warning shot, as they say in naval battles, across the bow, and really spend our energies and educate everyone in the region to understand what it means to be international. If you walk down the street of Center City today, you see cafes outside. You see people speaking all sorts of different languages. If you just walk around, there is no reason for you to think that this is not an international city. So I wrote that article, which fortunately was in the Inquirer, to let people know that International House, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Temple University, all the universities in the region, that all of us are a part of what makes this city international. And the average citizen, we hope, will be educated to appreciate that and recognize it. Now, if they had talked to me directly, I would have told them to let Will Smith, the actor, make the presentation. Because every resident in International House, when I say to them, "What do you like about Philadelphia?" they always say, "Will Smith lived here." Okay? So if they're saying it, their parents know it too. So if we'd had Will Smith help make the presentation, they would never say it wasn't an international city, because all of those folks there would have known about Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and they would have known about Philadelphia, and they would have known Will Smith as an international star. But that's just a little strategy I hope we can use in the future.
You were quite a strategic person within the city some years ago, so long ago.
Oh, Wilson Good.
Yes. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it really was fortunate. You know, Wilson Good was the first African-American mayor of the city. And it was a very important time in the African-American community, because it was a time for us to really exercise leadership. Most of us didn't know what power was. Most of us sort of knew what leadership was, but leadership is something that has to be operational. You have to exercise it. And when the mayor, Wilson Good, got in, he began to appoint, and I worked with him to become elected mayor, he began to appoint people to positions. And what's interesting about Mayor Good was that his management philosophy was, get out of your way and let you do the job. And when you get in trouble, as the manager, I'll come in. And when Wilson Good named me deputy city representative for arts and culture, and it was amazing because I had a budget. I was out in the public. I began to get a name in the arts and culture sector. The mayor had a very good position in the arts and culture sector. And all of that was because Mayor Good let all the deputies get out in front. And I use an example. A reporter would come to him and ask him an arts and culture question, and he'd say, "Well, go see Oliver about that." And by the third time, when he says, "Go see Oliver," they would come see me directly. Mm-hmm. And that was fine with the mayor. So Mayor Good was a very secure personality. And you find that a lot of mayors are control freaks. They don't want you to speak. They're the only ones that want to speak. But Wilson Good created more African-American leaders in this city than almost any other single person, because he let us exercise. And he also let us make our mistakes, which is also a part of leadership as well.
I had the pleasure of having him on this program just last week and the week before. He had a two-part program.
Well, he got that big award.
Absolutely.
He deserves it.
Yes. You're listening to University Forum. My guest, the Honorable Oliver St. Clair Franklin. And I like that St. Clair in the middle of it. I like the way it rolls off.
My father, I'm actually a junior, and my father was a reverend, and he went by O. St. Clair Franklin Sr. He didn't do the Oliver. He did the O. St. Clair. And it really comes from St. Lucia, because a part of our family, after the Revolutionary War, had left the country and gone to St. Lucia, and had then become Catholics, which is where the St. Clair comes from. And then so the family lore goes. And after when the Civil War started, they came back and joined the Union Army and ended up staying in Washington, where, you know, they ended up working for the government. So I'm a Washington family as well. So that's where the St. Clair comes from.
It's beautiful. I like it.
Thank you.
I'll do it every time I talk to
you.
Thank
you very much.
I love it. But now, a few years ago, talking about some of the international aspects of it, I understand you brought His Royal Highness Prince Andrew.
Oh, right. That's a very great story, because, you know, as honorary consul, you're expected to do certain things. And, of course, the Queen had her golden jubilee, 50 years on the throne. And we got a missive from London, from Buckingham Palace, and it said essentially that the Queen wanted honorary consuls across the world to do something in her honor. And part of the theme was to give back to your community and also to have an opportunity to bring people together. And I thought, you know, you're the first black man in this country to be the British honorary consul. You just can't have a cocktail party. So I got together with Prince Andrew, who is the Queen's second son, and said, why don't you come to Philadelphia and let's raise some money and let's send some inner city kids to Britain. And we talked about it, and finally we decided that we were going to pick a school, Simon Gratz High School, and we were going to launch this program called the Jubilee International Education Fund. And Prince Andrew came to Philadelphia in 02, and we actually raised a good deal of money. We had a dinner at the Art Museum, and he went out to Simon Gratz High School, and he got very, very enthused. And that program is still going. We have now we have a school in London that is partnered with Simon Gratz. We send 14 to 18 kids a year go in June, and we take 24 kids in this program, and for an entire year, we work with them. They study Britain. They meet via video television hookup with the school in London. They work on a common project, and about 12 to 14, 15 of them go off to Britain for 10 days. They go to the school. They finish the project for 2 days, and then we discovered that the kids in the British school had never been anywhere either. So now the British kids and our kids go to Stonehenge for a day, Bath for a day, Tower of London. And what's really exciting about this program is that these kids come back to Simon Gratz. Now they're in the 11th grade. And they are so focused because they've been abroad. And you know, one of the most interesting programs is the Millennium, the Bill and Melinda Gates Millennium Scholarships, which are given across the country to inner city or public schools, and everyone's eligible. Simon Gratz has received more Millennium Scholarships in this region than any other school, and every single student has been a member of the Jubilee program.
That is fantastic.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I'd
it's
love
amazing.
To talk to some of those students.
Oh,
I'll bring them on.
Please, please. Well,
absolutely.
We can arrange that, because they're really poised and they grow so much. So that's how you should use the royal family. If you have an opportunity to be with a royal, they love doing charity work. They love things with a purpose. And Prince Andrew has been really, really good to us. So we're very grateful for his support in this as well.
Well, that's absolutely wonderful. You've done some things in Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Something
well, Africa's
Liberia,
exciting.
Too.
Well, the most interesting thing is in South Africa in 1993 or 92. Nelson Mandela came to Philadelphia and got the Liberty Medal. And at that time, I was at Fidelity Investments, which was the largest investment firm in the world. And we bought a table, and we got to meet Mandela. And one of the things Mandela said was, you know, you got to come to South Africa. We want to develop it. And so I convinced Fidelity Investments to look at South Africa, and we went down to South Africa, and we, you know, began to sell Fidelity funds. And at the end of the day, I ended up having an investment firm, which was the first U.S. registered mutual fund to invest in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And I did that for a few years, very, very successfully, and sold it to a big company called the Calvert Group, which is an $8 billion company. And they've taken my little company and have raised gazillions of dollars and have put that money into the South African economy. And it has been a really extraordinary experience. And I was just in South Africa in February, where International House has tours. This year in May, we're going to Turkey. But last February, we went to South Africa, and I had an opportunity. I hadn't been there in 2 years to get back with my old colleagues and friends. And the story of South Africa is really amazing. More people in this country should go. It's easy to get to. It's a long flight, but it's easy to get to. Should go to South Africa and see a society like the American society that's trying to be an ideal. Mm. And the only two societies in the world that are trying to be an ideal is the United States, where we're always striving, in South Africa, which is consciously striving. Mm. So a lot of Americans there feel they're in a southern state, because the South Africans, they're all black people, Jewish people, Indian people, all kind of folks. But everyone is very friendly and very open. And you feel like you're walking around Atlanta, Georgia. Everybody speaks. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Africa is a continent where if you believe the hype, you'll never be successful. But if you go to Africa and see all the great things, even with all the problems that are happening, mm-hmm. There's so much opportunity there.
I had the privilege of having the chairman of the Reconciliation, Truth and Reconciliation
wow.
Commission,
Orrin
Yeare, and he was here in the States for a brief period of time also. But I noticed in some of the things I read about you that you had some contacts with Liberia related to, is it OIC? Or?
Well, OIC International.
Yeah.
OIC International. You know, Reverend Sullivan, mm-hmm. another person that maybe young Philadelphians don't know about, but Reverend Leon Sullivan, was a man who not only developed innovative programs in this country, he was also the first black man on the board of General Motors when General Motors was a powerful, powerful corporation. OIC International is a group that really does a lot of agricultural and micro lending and works with people in villages in several countries. And one is Liberia and Ivory Coast and Ghana and Nigeria. And what we really try to do is understand that if you want to develop a country, it's like if you want to develop North Philly or you want to develop a city or area, you've got to go with small businesses. And so that's pretty much what we focus on there. And that's pretty exciting work as well.
Hmm. But I think to have OIC continuing its work after Leon Sullivan's long tenure with them and his death.
It's what we have to do is enthuse young people with who Leon Sullivan was and the vision that he had. And as a result of his life, how many people around the globe's lives have been enhanced because of what he did? And if young people can get enthused about him and understand it, we won't have any problems getting people following Reverend Sullivan and doing the innovative work that he did.
Now, you're originally from Baltimore, you tell me.
Baltimore, yeah.
Were you your family completely from there?
No. It's a typical story. My family is originally from Virginia.
Okay.
And 30 miles south of Petersburg, Southampton County, Virginia. My mother, of course, went to Virginia State and Howard, and during the Second World War, she got a job, you know, as jobs were opening up in Washington. My father grew up in Washington, and half of his family came from Buena Vista, Virginia. And so my mother, who was a country girl, met my father, who was a city slicker. And they got married. So he was a Methodist minister. And the Methodists moved between Baltimore and Washington. So I grew up, you know, every 7 years moving into a different parsonage and a different church. And so I grew up in the Baltimore, Washington, but primarily Baltimore.
Hmm. And you got to Philadelphia. How?
Well, my wife was going to Temple.
Oh.
And she was doing her master's degree in psychology. And I came up. She wasn't my wife then, but I followed her up, and she shortly became my wife afterwards. But I always said when she was going to Temple to do her graduate degree, a master's degree, that we were going to come to Philadelphia for 1 year and go to California. And then she took 2 years to do her master's degree. Then she decided she wanted to teach in a community college. And then she got accepted to Penn to do her PhD in psychology. And I realized this is going to be another 5 years. So I said, honey, you know, Philadelphia is not a bad place. My last name is Franklin. It's not a bad name to have. So why don't I just put my roots down and let's settle here and you can develop your practice. So it's been really good living in Philadelphia.
And if you look at your career and the brief time that we have left, you started at one end as far as your work and somehow got into multinational financial
dealing. That's
right, dealing.
Yes, and sort of international investments. And now I've come full circle. I'm back into the nonprofit world, mission-driven world. But Philadelphia is an interesting city because people will get out of your way and let you do what you need to do to be successful. And I hear a lot of people saying that, you know, I Philly is a tough town and Philly is a this town. Well, you know, it is a local town like most cities. But the beauty of it is that people will get out of your way. And as long as you're focused and serious, you can attract capital, you can make friends, and people will actually help you succeed. And that's what's kind of nice about living here in Philadelphia, is that it's an easy place to live. And people will support you.
You like making money?
Well, I'm not making a lot of money now, but certainly when I was making money, it was interesting because the money is power, and with money comes options, and with money, if it's used effectively and strategically, you can do an awful lot of good. I sort of grew up as the son of a minister where people didn't talk about money. You know, the evil man can get to heaven and you know, the poor man is going to get to heaven. There were all these things that in many ways made you shy against looking at investments. But once you get into it and clear your mind and focus on being successful, you need money. You don't need tons of money, but you need enough money to be successful and also to help others. And that's really the important point.
One of the things that I picked up on the internet when I was checking out your Googling on it is that you consider to have spent over 22 years launching domestic and international products and building the capacity of organizations. The Honorable Oliver St. Clair Franklin, OBE, CEO, President of International
That's
House.
That's right.
I'm telling you, I'm so delighted to have you
here.
Well,
it's a real pleasure, Professor, to be here with you. I've known you over the years and really all the good work that you've done at Temple. And it's just really a pleasure to be here, particularly to follow a great person like W. Wilson Good.
Thank you so much for being my guest on the University Forum. I'm Jean Moore. Please send your comments or questions on University Forum programs to me by email, jemoore@temple.edu, or call my voicemail, 215-204-4376.